Good morning. This is Neil Strausser with the CBS World News Roundup. For the first time in 9 months, President Carter is back home in Plains, Georgia this morning. Home after a whirlwind tour of California and Florida, which, as expected, produced the overwhelming endorsement of the National Education Association convention meeting in Los Angeles, but a less enthusiastic response last night at the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People convention in Miami Beach. There, Mr. Carter warned black leaders that they and their descendants have much to lose if a Republican president makes the next several appointments to the U.S. Supreme Court.
These federal judges serve for life. They will be interpreting your rights, the rights of our children, and the rights of our children's children into the next century.
The president asked his listeners to seriously consider the impact on the nation's future of the appointment of the next three or four justices. But as Sam Ford notes, they had listened to many speeches by the time Mr. Carter appeared.
President Carter's 4th of July appearance was the grand finale of the NAACP's week-long convention, in which Campaign 80 seemed to be the principal item on the agenda. Monday, NAACP leaders responded angrily upon learning that Republican Ronald Reagan had declined their invitation to speak. Tuesday, candidate John Anderson told the convention he was a product of white America who had few close black friends, but that he was interested in the problems of blacks. Wednesday, it was candidate Edward Kennedy's turn, and he turned the convention out with a rousing civil rights address, which left the delegates waving their luncheon napkins wildly. And last night, President Carter came, receiving a reception which was friendly, but not nearly as enthusiastic as was Senator Kennedy's. The reaction to President Carter's message by Howard Fitch of Bayonne, New Jersey, was similar to that of some other delegates.
The things that he told us that the administration has done as far as the employment and certain housing, those things are very positive. But it still doesn't relieve the fact that we're still laboring under the same conditions that we were laboring under 15 years ago.
And candidate Ronald Reagan, widely criticized for turning down the NAACP, readily accepted an invitation to speak at the predominantly black National Urban League convention next month. Sam Ford, CBS News, Miami.
President Carter, arriving in Plains close to midnight, was warmly welcomed by his old neighbors and kept saying it's good to be home, to go fishing, walk down Main Street, and play softball against Brother Billy. He stays home only until Tuesday when he flies off to Japan, with a stop along the way in Detroit to hear of the auto industry's problems with Japanese auto imports. Medical sources in Cairo report that the hospitalized former Shah of Iran had a troubled night. The doctor is still trying to keep a lingering infection at bay. In Bangkok, Thailand today, the first concrete evidence of the U.S. promise to speed up arms shipments. Steve Patton reports.
The United States began its airlift of arms into Thailand today with the arrival of a giant C-141 transport into Bangkok. The U.S. Air Force plane carried six 105-millimeter howitzer artillery pieces. Two more planes are due in later this weekend with 12 more of the howitzers. The military hardware flown in today is part of a $400 million order placed by the Thais with the U.S. last year. The equipment would have normally arrived by sea. But in response to the Vietnamese incursion into Thailand last month, Washington and Bangkok decided on an arms airlift for part of the order. At least three more flights are due in shortly in addition to this weekend's arrivals. Thailand is paying for the arms it is getting, but the United States agreed to pick up the $1 million transportation bill for the airlift. Steve Patton for CBS News, Bangkok.
The sea lift of Cuban refugees to Florida apparently is not yet over because of a voyage that some are calling Fidel Castro's last hurrah. Charles Gomez reports from Key West.
A freighter loaded with 3,000 to 5,000 Cuban refugees is expected to pull into the Key West docks by Sunday. Coast Guard officials say the Blue Fire is reportedly now loading refugees at Mariel Bay, and barring engine problems, should make the journey across the Florida Straits by tomorrow. Defying President Carter's ban, the freighter, owned by Cuban interests, left Cayman Island charting a course for Tampa. Instead, it went directly for Mariel. To cope with a potential last-minute influx, 500 Marines are reportedly on standby duty at Camp Lejeune. They would help process the refugees. Authorities fear the freighter may be packed with common criminals to signal what is being labeled as Fidel Castro's last hurrah. Many of the last boats to arrive when the sea lift began grinding to a halt several weeks ago contained a large number of criminals, indicating that Castro was attempting to empty his jails of what he calls antisocial elements. Charles Gomez, CBS News, Key West.
In Kingston, Jamaica, the U.S. Embassy has asked the Jamaican government for additional protection for American diplomats after gunmen shot up the home of the embassy first secretary, who was identified in a publication this week as the supposed CIA station chief in Jamaica. The allegation was later broadcast over the state-run radio and television, but the Jamaican government has expressed total indignation over the attack. The embassy first secretary was in the house at the time of the shooting, but was not hurt. In Detroit, where activities leading up to the Republican convention are already getting underway this weekend, negotiators are planning a long holiday weekend of bargaining in an effort to settle the strike by 9,000 city employees. The story from Dave Greer of CBS radio affiliate WWJ.
Today is the fifth day of the strike that's left garbage in the streets as the city prepares for the Republican National Convention, which opens in 9 days. City negotiator Mark Ulichny said late last night that bargainers expect to meet nonstop this weekend. But Lloyd Simpson, the chief union negotiator, predicts that there will be movement by the city in the latest round of talks. Negotiators took a cooler and even a Ouija board with them into bargaining sessions early this morning. Yesterday, the city went to court to force water department chemists who honored picket lines of other striking employees back to work in order to protect the city's water supply. 4 million city and suburban residents are served by the Detroit Water Department. Health officials also say mounds of garbage that have stacked up in 5 days are not yet a health hazard. This is Dave Greer for CBS News, Detroit.
In the Southwest and the Southern Plains, it's the heat, always the heat. That now familiar story from Tom Olson of CBS radio affiliate KRLD in Dallas.
The sun beats down each day, drying the land a little more and setting new records. The 4th of July was one of the cooler days, with the mercury topping out at a record 104 degrees, and it's expected to climb into the hundreds again today. The heat has claimed its 13th confirmed victim in Dallas alone, with more than three dozen other cases under investigation. Across the Southwest, nearly 200 people have reportedly died from the heat. Grass fires ignite quickly, and firefighters have had to scramble to stay on top of the situation. And when will it end? The weather forecasters say it will take a tropical storm now in the Gulf of Mexico to push the high-pressure system over the Southwest out and bring cooler air in. And that could be more than a month away. Tom Olson for CBS News in Dallas.
There were heavy thunderstorms overnight in parts of the Central Plains and Upper Mississippi Valley, hailstones up to baseball size reported in the Omaha, Nebraska area, and wind gusts of up to 60 miles an hour. Here in Washington last night, an estimated 425,000 people jammed onto the mall to hear the Beach Boys and watch the fireworks burst over the Washington Monument. In Boston, of course, it was the Boston Pops, but with a difference, as Andrea Carnero of CBS radio station WEEI reports.
It was John Williams' first 4th of July concert on the Esplanade along the banks of the Charles River, an annual event begun many years ago by the late maestro Arthur Fiedler. 400,000 people jammed the banks of the river on this 4th of July. Williams became conductor of the Boston Pops earlier this year and said he was looking forward excitedly to this event. And it was a smashing success as the throng stood and cheered, waving American flags during the traditional playing of the 1812 overture, complete with cannon, fireworks, and chiming church bells. Williams also made quite a hit with the crowd as he led the Pops through one of his own very familiar compositions, the Darth Vader theme from the film The Empire Strikes Back. A beautiful 4th of July event in Boston, one which has been a tradition for many years and which will continue for many more. Andrea Carnero for CBS News, Boston.
Harbor Springs, Michigan lost its 4th of July fireworks in one big bang yesterday. More than $3,000 of fireworks loaded onto a barge in the town's harbor for some reason exploded prematurely. No one was hurt. Near Antioch, California, at least 30 people received minor injuries when an off-target rocket fell into the stands at the Contra Costa County Fairgrounds during the 4th of July fireworks display. Six people were taken by ambulance to a Martinez hospital suffering from burns and lacerations.